Hello, everybody. Welcome to the online group Nutrition and Lifestyle Coaching Program. This is Brian Champ, and this is session number 13 on January 29th, 2015. Our topic today is how to be a healthy vegan. And one of our guest speakers today, our main guest speaker, is Michelle Brown. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
Thank you for being here. And a little background on Michelle, and so I didn't get an official bio from you, but I took it from your website. So I broke it down into some of the key points, and Michelle does quite a bit, so feel free to add anything that you would like as well. But Michelle is a Kung Fu world champion. There's a whole lot of stuff around Kung Fu with her bio. So I simplified it to Kung Fu world champion. So awesome. She's a boot camp owner in the East Bay. She has a company name, Gumzaba. And did I screw that up? Gumzaba?
Oh, yeah, Gumzaba. It's a Native American word, but you did pretty well.
And what the heck does that mean, by the way? I've actually been meaning to ask you about that.
It comes from the Washoe Native American tribe, which was the original word for Tahoe, and it was their harvest festival. And basically is a time where they brought all their best wares and they traded. And so what we're saying with Gumzaba is if you bring your best, we'll bring ours.
Awesome. All right. So Coach Michelle, I'm going to call you Coach Michelle right now. She's a trainer. She's a tough mudder competitor like me. So we have a lot of similar interests. We're in a similar group together as well, where we're colleagues, called the California Health MRC. And MRC, some of you have heard me mention this a couple times now. That means Medical Reserve Corps. So you'll hear me talk about more of that in the future. But we're a group of people in Silicon Valley area, for the most part, that have come together to improve healthcare, to simplify it. And she's also a contributing writer to a local newspaper called Alamo Today. So she does some similar things that I do, but in the East Bay. So she's got a number of boot camps out there. So if you know of anybody that is in the East Bay, a lot of you know, my clients are, you know, in this area on the peninsula, and they do boot camps here. And if you're looking for a good boot camp in that Danville, Santa Ramon area, you know, let me know, and you know, we'll get Michelle that information. And then also joining us today, we have Sherry Pula, and she is joins us every week to help me with the technical side of things, and also she's a phenomenal coach herself and has an expertise in helping people with emotional detoxes and helping people heal from toxic and painful relationships, anxiety, stress, and grief. Again, she's here every week with me. She uses a variety of strategies in her work to help people discover what beliefs are generating the undesirable emotions and to permanently transform them through a process called Clear Your Beliefs. So last time we spoke about relationships, and Sherry was great in that conversation. So just always glad to have her. So thank you, Sherry. Welcome.
Thank you.
And before we go on, I want to just go over our guidelines of our webinar. So on your reminder email for this talk, you've got a link that says access. Or click on the social webinar link. So for those of you that want to see my PowerPoint that I'm going off of, click on that, and you'll also it'll also make more sense when we're doing the breakout groups as well. So click on that. If you have any technical difficulties now or later, always hit number 2. Okay, so you may want to write these little things down. Number 2, if you're having any technical difficulties. 3, if you have a question. Just always keep that in mind. 3 is question. If you want to answer yes to anything, hit number 5, and 4, no. So I'm going to ask you yes-type questions throughout the throughout our time here together, so don't go to sleep on me. We're going to try to make this as interactive as possible. Also, we're going to use the chat function. So if you have if you access that link, you'll be able to hit the chat function and send us questions. So please feel free to ask as many questions as possible. Either I will get back to you, or Sherry or Tanya is also on the line. So one of us will get back to you. And if you want more information on something, also just do the chat thing too. Okay? So let's go ahead and practice that real quick. Let's see. Got a few questions for you. So how many of you are currently following a vegan diet? 5 yes. 4, no. Just going to do a little poll here. Trying to kind of find out who our audience is. All right. So nobody currently is following a vegan diet. Awesome. Actually, we have one. So we have Katie who said yes. Okay. And next question. So we're going to ask a couple questions here. I want to find out a little bit about you guys here. How many are you currently following a vegetarian diet? And some of you may not even know the difference. So correct me if I'm wrong, but Michelle. So when I say a vegan diet, there's no animal protein. So there's no eggs, there's no dairy, guys. So I should have been more specific on that in case you don't know. But how many of you are following a vegetarian diet? That means you may be eating eggs, maybe eating dairy, and then there's different another type of vegetarian diet could be including fish, right, Michelle?
Pescatarian, if you want to be really specific, is fish.
Exactly.
And lacto-ovo-vegetarian is somebody who eats eggs and dairy.
Yes. But it's still under the umbrella of vegetarian, correct?
With exception to pescatarian, yeah. Generally, vegetarians are people who don't eat animal flesh.
Okay. But flesh is, so like milk is not flesh.
Yeah, milk would be vegetarian. Yeah, just with the exception of fish, I wouldn't consider that a vegetarian.
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So how many of you, so those are already confusing. So how many of you are a vegetarian? Hit 5 for yes, are currently following a vegetarian diet. 5 yes or 4 no. All right. Got it. Okay. And lastly, how many of you have tried the above, either being a vegan or a vegetarian? Last question. How many of you have tried in the past one of the above, being a vegan or vegetarian? Okay. All right. Perfect. So some people have tried it for sure. Okay, great. So we're going to come back to that question very soon. So my big question for you of the day is, isn't a vegan dietary model the right one for you? Okay, so I've tried it myself, and I've go in periods where I do either a vegan dietary model or a vegetarian dietary model throughout the year, and I really like changing things up. So when you hear Michelle speak today, I just want you to think about, you know whether this may be different than what you have experienced in the past, what she's saying, because I'm sure she's going to go over, you know, her story and try to look for something there that that maybe changes what your current beliefs are about being a vegan or vegetarian. So today we're going to be talking about number 4 on the 6 daily primal needs. So as many of you know, I have this coaching model, the 6 daily primal needs on it, and number 1 is air, 2 is water, 3 is sleep, 4 is food or eating, 5 is love, connection, relationships, and 6 is movement. So today we're going to be talking about the food side of this equation, and we're going to be talking specifically about benefits of being a vegan. Michelle, she's an expert in this field. So that is our goal today. So our agenda is to hear Michelle's story. We're going to talk about why you would want to follow a vegan diet. How can you do this? We're going to talk about 2 problems or difficulties being a vegan, so protein, how do you get enough protein, and vegan B12 sources. And then we're going to talk about athletic training on a plant-based diet, what to eat, okay? So, Michelle, let's go ahead and start with your story. And, how did you become a vegan? Tell me kind of, a little bit about that shift for you.
Well, I became a vegan in 1999. So I have had a lot of experience being vegan. I haven't always been a healthy vegan. When I became vegan, before that I was actually vegetarian for about 5 years, and before that I was pescatarian for a while, which means I did eat fish and some seafood. My journey to being vegan was based more on I consider myself an ethical vegan, so my priority is just to a non-harming, cruelty-free lifestyle. So as a vegan, I also don't wear leather or use other animal products, and I try to avoid things that are harming. Of course, with life we harm. I'm going to run over bugs in my car and hit them on my windshield, so nobody's perfect. But I definitely I take it, you know, as a part of a big part of who I am. The reason I became vegan was mainly I had a friend who was, and I'd been vegetarian for a while, but I definitely noticed the adverse effects of dairy. And a lot of times when people become vegetarian, they rely a lot on dairy for protein. And so they'll eat more cheese, they'll drink more milk. And if you're not used to that, which I grew up in a household where we didn't have much dairy, it was really hard on my digestive tract. So I noticed a lot of stomach pain, and so I decided to cut out dairy and try other ways of, you know, fulfilling my protein intake, and it worked for me. Like I said, I've been doing this a long time, and I've competed all over the world and trained in very, very rigorous competitions and done well. I definitely, now that I've gone through that, looking back and, you know, in retrospect, I see, you know, when I started training, I started becoming much more aware of my nutrient intake, not just the protein, but the nutritious food I was eating would play a huge role in my sustainability of my workouts to prepare for things like world competitions, because the training, you know, can last 6 hours and you need to be prepared. In the past, you know, 12 years, I've really cleaned up my diet, and I focus on very little processed food. I don't take white sugar. You know, on occasion, I'll have, you know, a very small amount if I'm, you know, if it's vegan, but I try to stay away from it completely, just because I know it doesn't make me feel good. And now that I've been vegan a long time, I definitely reap the benefits of it. So I sleep well. It works for my lifestyle. My husband's also vegan, and so that makes it a little bit more manageable as opposed to a split lifestyle where, you know, some of my friends have an omnivorous husband or wife and they're vegan, so that makes it a little more manageable. I don't know what else as far as my history I can say.
I would like to ask you a question real quick. Did you ever experiment with raw milk and raw dairy products versus pasteurized products for dairy?
You know, yeah, when I was young, very young, I had asthma. And so my parents took me off of dairy, but I had a nanny who was a Spanish nanny, and she was really worried about my calcium intake. So she was trying to give me powdered milk secretly.
Yes, powdered milk. Oh, great.
Which is probably the worst kind. And so my dad found out, and he got some raw processed or unprocessed raw milk, and I seemed to do better with that. In my adult life, I did not try unprocessed milk, just because I found that I'm not a big milk drinker anyway. I've never drunk, you know, had a fiending for a glass of milk. So now I actually press my own almond milk, and I really enjoy almond milk. I haven't tried that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I probably went. I had a number of digestive issues as well, and for years. And yeah, I did a vegan detox for 28 days. It was kind of my introduction to this whole nutrition realm. And a lot of people know this story, but I basically did it because a girlfriend of mine at the time had hives, and she had tried a number of different remedies and things, and finally a doctor said, you know, let's just try a food elimination diet. And, you know, one of the common foods to take out of a diet when you're kind of exploring possible relationships to pain and especially digestive pain, is, you know, taking out dairy. That's a big one. Gluten's another one, and eggs is another one, actually. Those are the three big ones. But, you know, I got rid of dairy, and I was drinking like 2 glasses of milk a day and having, you know, non-fat cheese, all this processed garbage milk products. And literally I stopped having gas, and I just thought everybody was supposed to have gas, right? You know, because people do. And literally I got off of it, and, you know, my life has never really been better. So I got off milk, and I was convinced that, you know, the milk was the enemy. And then one of my mentors said that, you know, you should try raw milk, Brian. It's not the milk. It's the processing of the milk. It's the fact that the enzymes are not there to help you digest it. And you know, it's killed, it's dead, it's not, there's no, there's really no calcium anyway in it, right? But it's fortified. So there's not, it's not the food that we were hoping it would be. And actually now the research says that milk is actually now depleting your bones instead of actually, you know, increasing mineralization too, which is kind of interesting. Everything we have learned is now incorrect. So yeah, I've kind of experimented with myself and with others, and it seems like probably 90% of people who didn't do well on pasteurized milk do well on raw milk. So I just wanted to throw that in for all of you. And I really don't drink a lot of raw milk. I'm just spilling that out myself, or I don't drink milk much either. But I'm not scared of milk from a digestive standpoint. I actually don't feel bad. So just want to throw out that interesting, you know, thing to know, because it is a common problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I've been researching a little bit is vitamin K, which in order to process calcium, we need something called vitamin K2, which is very, unless you're eating organ meats, you're not getting a lot of vitamin K2. And K2 is important for the health of your arteries and your bones because it carries the calcium. So people who, for example, are on a heavy, you know, meat-eating diet and they're not getting, you know, if they're not eating organs, they can store that calcium in the arteries if they're not getting the K2, which will, you know, help it float through. So there is a vegan supplement called MK7, which is basically a fermented product that I take in order to process that, because in my background of Kung Fu, you know, you break bones. And so, I wanted to make sure I was protected, because there is a concern for not just vegans, but everybody lacking in K2 and other things like we'll talk about later, B12, omegas, and those things.
So did you say M is in Mary?
Yeah, M is in Mary, K is in K, and then 7. And a non-vegan source, which is a supplement, if you don't want to eat organ meats, is MK4. But I would just caution that you want to make sure, you know, the products, the supplements you take are non-GMO. And I know, Brian, you're big on non-GMO, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sure.
So just checking for that on the label of my supplements is something. And I try to take supplements from whole plant sources as well.
Got it. And I know Dennett has a question right now, so let me go ahead and answer Dennett's question.
It's for Michelle. I believe when she was referring to the K2, I think the supplement's actually made from natto, which is fermented fish. So I wanted to see, is that the one she uses, the natto-based supplement?
Yes, I use a natto-based supplement because natto tastes horrible. And, you know, natto is a Japanese staple. And there, you know, you get used to things like taro root and things like that, where, you know, some of us who aren't, you know, grow up, you know, we don't grow up with those tastes. It's just, it's really, really strong. And there's new studies that talk a lot about how, you know, Japanese populations have less heart disease. Well, it's changing now because they're coming onto a standard American diet more and more, but they're thinking that it's because of the small amounts of, you don't need much K2, but you do need some. The body does convert K1 in some circumstances, but it's not, the research isn't quite there.
Got it. So let's talk about how to do this. So, you know, there's, you know, just like people who eat animal protein, there's healthy paleo people, right, or healthy animal protein eaters. All these paleo because they're just popular right now. But there's healthy vegans and there's not healthy vegans. This is always kind of the question. And you know, I've had a hard time out there following, you know, finding healthy vegans, honestly. You know, because just like what you said before, that, you know, you, to a lot of people, I mean, I have a large Indian population, by the way. And so I'm consulting a lot of people on improving their vegan lifestyle because they don't eat animal proteins. So, and I'm finding that, you know, especially, you know, the population that I'm getting, you know, those, they typically want weight loss. They typically have come into this country for about 3 years, gained about 30 pounds, and they've deviated a little bit from their cultural diet. And they, you know, they're eating, you know, our processed vegan type model of food, and they're just struggling. I mean, plus, you know, they are working more, so they're, you know, a different lifestyle, but, you know, it's hard. right? But it's also, I don't want to say that it's hard to be a healthy vegan without saying it's hard to be a healthy meat eater as well. I kind of think it's just hard to be a healthy person. So
that's what I was going to say.
So just, you know, tell us how to do this from I know it takes work, but, you know, tell us how to make this happen.
Well, yeah, you know, we spend a lot of time on food in our household. You know, my husband cooks a lot. I cook a lot. We prepare well. And that's just something that, you know, a lot of people don't do. A lot of people, I actually consult a few people who want to, you know, gently lean into vegetarian and vegan lifestyles. And the biggest obstacle we come across is being prepared. Most of us are so used to having things convenient for us. You know, it's so easy to go and get a fat-filled, terrible meal, even though you know you're going to feel terrible. You know, we're habitual creatures. And so changing and breaking those habits and replacing them with other habits and learning to prioritize yourself, I think that's really the struggle. Whether you're vegan or whether you're just looking to eat plant-based or healthier. Now, having said that, you know, I'm not perfect. There are mornings where I'm in a hurry and I'll come home and have a sprouted piece of toast with almond butter on it because for most people that's going to sound fairly healthy. For me, I would prefer to have, you know, fresh food that's unprocessed. But, you know, there are days where I'm in more of a hurry, so I'm not going to be able to do that. But for the most part, we try and really prioritize time for food. And we lead a lifestyle that is more conducive to that, but, you know, there are days where I teach 8 hours and my only break is the car. So, you know, driving between classes. So on those days I have a cooler, I'm prepared. I'm not going to stop at a food truck because there's several reasons I wouldn't, aside from being vegan, because I really like to know who's been touching my food most of the time. And, you know, I trust my methods and I know they work. So I would say that's the one big, you know, transitional thing that takes time. You know, it takes time to learn to prepare and to not beat yourself up if you don't prepare. And then also having people that have done it for a long time. I didn't really have that luxury. I've never, you know, I'm the first truly healthy vegan. Well, now I've met a lot more, but that I had known when I started becoming a healthy vegan. So it was a lot of experimentation for me. And now it's becoming much more prevalent. You've got people like Brendan Brazier, who is a major athlete, and he's written a book called Thrive and a few other books. And, you know, he really is a very well-known example of somebody who's making it work. But you look at his recipes and they take preparation. Sure. You know, I always say it may take time, and it may take a little bit of extra money at this point, but it's much better than the alternative, which is, you know, not taking time for yourself and sacrificing your health. You know, our health is truly, as I know Brian and most of you agree, it's your greatest wealth. You know how it feels to be unwell. All of us do. And when you're well, you're so much more thankful. But we don't, until recently, we really haven't made the connection of what we eat really makes a difference in our everyday lives, just like sleep and, you know, water and all those things do. It's really becoming more scientifically proven. So, and then as far as recipes and things like that go, I can definitely, if people need that, I can provide that. I also have a list of protein sources that we can go over too and other things.
Cool. And actually, I want to get into that. So first thing you said was, yeah, if you have some easy to share recipes, great. Please send us a link. Do you have those on your website by chance? That's something that you...
Yeah, actually, I have a fellow healthy vegan that does a lot of recipes on her site. She puts up two a week. And a lot of my clients have been making them, and they're loving them. I told her, make them tasty and easy. So, at doomsaba.com, you can click on blog, and every, you know, second or third post is going to be black bean brownies or, you know, some delicious kale. I think massaged kale salad is in there. There's some great ones.
So let's talk about, like, what is your personal model for protein, carbohydrates, and fat, and would it be the same for everybody?
I think I move all day long, so I eat a lot of food. You know, I have the luxury, right, I say, of moving all day. I don't lead a sedentary lifestyle. BMI calculators, even they tell me that I need less food because I can't plug in that I'm literally moving all day. And, you know, Brian,
sure,
you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
So
for my model, I really focus on clean eating. I do not count calories. I focus on, you know, the meals that I feel really good after. I definitely take note of those and try and incorporate those more often. I eat a lot of variety. I love to have a colorful plate. As far as protein goes, a lot of people, you know, in our society eat too much protein, and that has adverse effects too. You know, women only need 46 grams of protein per day, men about 56. And you're talking about, you know, a 1 ounce steak, which is about the size of a matchbook, has, I think I wrote down 77 grams. That's 154%. So if you're eating a 3 ounce steak, that's a lot of protein. And really, unless you're chasing that protein down, I'm not sure that you're going to need that much.
Females need 40 grams of protein on average, 40, you're saying?
Yeah, for about 46 grams of protein per day. And again, that's an average. If you're a CrossFitter or somebody that's pushing a lot of weight, you might need a little bit more. Men are going to need about 56, and this is based on the average, you know, person. At, you know, so average people, they say work out about 3 days a week, and you know, not moderate, not rigorous. As far as carbohydrates go, I stick with, you know, fresh vegetables. I eat a lot of leafy greens, which also do have some protein in them. Beans are one of my main sources of protein, as well as seeds. I do take some soy. When I take soy, it's sprouted. I prefer sprouted because it digests easier, and always organic and non-GMO. There's a lot of talk about cancer and soy, and a lot of that's been debunked. So if anybody wants information on that, my next article is going to be about that, and I can definitely send that over because I hear that a lot. And soy, you know, soy oil, there's a lot of soy products added into a lot of fast food. So that type of processed soy, I don't agree with. But eating edamame, you know, is a great way to get some protein in, and it's a very clean way, you know, without any process, like, you know, if you don't want to eat tofu. Or if you don't like the taste of tofu, because even though there are a lot of varieties of it, some people just don't like it. Quinoa is another, they call quinoa the perfect protein. There are ways to cook quinoa that are more savory than other ways. Yes, you're going to get carbohydrates there, but, you know, as an active person, again, my carbohydrate level is not really a huge concern. If anything, I do better with a little bit more carbohydrate because I enjoy movement and rigorous movement.
So what about the beans? So you mentioned beans, and are you soaking your beans prior? I'm guessing you're not eating beans out of a can.
No. I buy dry. Right. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, we buy our beans dry. We will soak them. You know, sometimes we don't. I love my lentils. Funny enough, when I was young, I didn't do well with lentils because I have a peanut allergy. Luckily enough, now they don't affect me, so that can be a concern for people. I love garbanzo beans.
Lentils or peanuts?
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Got it.
Very allergic, like deathly. And lentils, I believe, are in the same family. They are a tree. They're a tree nut, I believe. And so lentils are closely associated somehow. So people with peanut allergies can be affected adversely by lentils. It's uncommon, but man, if it's uncommon, I've had it, I swear. So as far as beans go, I like, you know, adzuki beans. I try and go for the more rare beans as opposed to like a pinto. I'll choose something that is, you know, a little more in line with an ancient culture if I can get my hands on it. When we do go out to eat, which is not often, because we enjoy our food here and it's more, you know, cost effective and time effective to eat at home for us, we try to stick with more exotic foods so that we're getting a good cross section of nutrients.
So I want to go back to beans for a second because, you know, legumes are like anti-paleo and other people talk about beans. So talk about, like, how did that evolve and, you know, what the thought is for you?
You know,
the bad rap on legumes create? I mean, I know it's about you know, your inability to digest beans because it's phytic acids.
Right. And so, you know, if people soak their beans, they're going to have a lot less problem digesting them. That's one, you know, pretty
pretty common known fact.
Right.
Personally, I've never had a huge problem digesting beans. I don't get gas from them, but I also eat them in combinations, you know, with complementary foods. So, for example, mm-hmm. beans with rice or beans with quinoa, I would never eat just a cup of beans on their own, with
right.
the exception of occasionally I'll have some hummus. I'll make hummus here or buy hummus at the store. But I've never had a problem with that. You know, peas are another great source of protein, and I'm not sure if peas would be considered are not paleo as well.
I don't believe so.
Not really sure.
Yeah,
I
think
I believe
peas in the legume family as well. I believe.
Yeah, I believe so too. But they're usually separated on, you know, in websites and in you know reading information from beans. So I don't know if there's a little bit of a difference in the acidity of those. And I'll
yes.
look into that because that may be a resource for some people. You can make, you know, great things out of green peas that pack a ton of protein and nutrients in them. So that might be an alternative.
I sell two different products, actually. A rice protein by itself, three different products, a pea protein by itself from Designs for
mm-hmm.
Health, which I really love, and then a combination
right.
of rice and pea that Metagenic sells. So I do really
mm-hmm.
well on that product myself, the pea product.
Me too. I use the Designs for Health pea protein when I use protein
in my
shakes. So,
very
yeah.
nice. And I feel pretty good on that. So
yeah.
going back to beans again, for some people that don't know how to soak their beans, can you just explain that process?
Yeah, so it's important that you use water that's not tap water. You want to soak, every bean is different, so you want to soak the beans and clean out the water often. If you just leave them in a heated area, they can start to smell.
Yes.
So I can definitely send you some information on that, you know, because there's some nuances within, you know, from bean to bean and how you want to soak it. Some beans take more water, so they'll soak up really fast, and then you'll be left with just the beans. Garbanzo beans are one of those. So, yeah.
Okay,
and you can also, you can buy beans sprouted, too, just so you know, if you don't want to soak them. They have sprouted lentils in bins at Whole Foods now, sprouted
yes.
Garbanzo beans I've seen as well.
That's a lot easier, but you're going to pay for it, right?
Yeah, you will pay a little more for it. But
yeah.
if you're just starting, it might be, you know, you might try it and then compare it. And you don't have to buy
yes.
a lot of sprouted, you know, beans, a little bit makes a lot.
Now, if it's sprouted, is there more protein or is it just easier to digest or both?
It's easier to digest. The protein amount,
positive,
doesn't change. Yeah, yeah. And also, a lot of people are talking about soaking nuts now, too. I haven't done that myself, but evidently it really brings out some of the best nutrients in them. So I'll do a little research on that, and we'll see what I can write about that.
And actually, I'm in my house right now, and, you know, I have – a number of soaked nuts. My wife is soaking as we speak. So
we have soaked.
What do we have over here? We have soaked walnuts, almonds. We actually buy the soaked almonds. Hold on, she's screaming at me right now. What? Sherry, put Chris on the line, please. Chris, are you there?
What number?
I know. Yes, there she is. Hi there. Yeah, I know. Sherry, is Chris on the line?
She is, yep.
Okay.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, there she is.
So, yeah, I'm making homemade granola, which is a paleo recipe, and it's quite delicious. The kids love it, and it's basically almonds, walnuts, pecans, and pumpkin seeds, and you just sprout them for a little over an hour, and just mix it with, you know, the other stuff, chia seeds and black meal and honey, and grind it up and bake it. It's awesome.
Totally. And again, in terms of soaking that, how what are you doing that overnight, Chris?
Oh no. This recipe I love because it just says to soak it for an hour. So I was questioning whether or not it's actually doing any good, but it just softens the nuts a little bit, you know.
Got it. That's another good question. How long do we need to soak them? I know there's different information out there. So anybody know any information on that? Mother Michelle, or I know Dennett had a comment as well. Michelle, did you
I've soaked almonds overnight just to make almond milk, though, and only to make them softer. And now
you know, on occasion I'll soak mine, but they have pre-soaked almonds at the store now, so sometimes I'll buy those instead.
Yes.
Do you mind if I ask you really quick how you make your almond milk? I know you're going to send a link for the recipes, but I have tried many times, and my kids just don't like it. And I don't know if I'm just doing something wrong or, you know.
Are you using a cheesecloth to strain it?
Yes. I have the bag. It's an almond bag. And, you know, and I'll sweeten it with honey or something, but then you've got the sugar. So I'm trying to, you know, for myself, I try to do the unsweetened. Or as you know, not as much sugar. Try to a little, you know, stevia or something. But the kids are just—they're so picky. They actually just would rather have it in the carton, which is fine.
Right.
Loaded with sugar, you know.
I know. You know, it probably is something that they're just used to the taste. But it does taste really almondy when you make your own. I'm sure you've noticed that. It's much more of an almond flavor. You know, that might just be not, you know, it might be too strong for their palates because they're young. But I combine mine with a 4-to-1 ratio. So 1 cup of water to 4 cups of, I'm sorry, 1 cup of almonds to 4 cups of water, which is a much higher ratio than is usually recommended because my husband doesn't like it when it's really thick. And then we blend it in the Vitamix over and over and over. Usually I do 4 times on high, and then I strain it through a strainer first, and then I put it through a cheesecloth. So
you're doing the cheesecloth at the very end. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, just to get all the little pieces out.
And then you don't thicken it. You just do that, and that's
And we don't sweeten it because when we want to put something sweet in it, we'll just add a little date syrup. I did sweeten it once with dates, and that worked. Have you tried that, Medjool dates?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
I have definitely.
Then, yeah.
And then I like it. I think it's great. I'm just trying to work with the kids.
Yeah, it might be a little too strong for their palates.
If you guys, if Michelle, again, you could send that recipe, that would be terrific. Because I want to ask you a few more questions before we go into additional questions.
Okay, yeah.
Actually, so you guys are having a great conversation on milk, though. I want to keep going. But so I know Dennett has had a question for a while, so let's get to Dennett and then Jeff, and then I have a couple more questions for you to chat about, Michelle.
Cool.
Dennett,
are you
there?
Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So you mentioned, my question again goes for Michelle, you mentioned about sprouted foods, but I'm wondering, do you do many full-fledged fermented foods? And I've also noticed the prep time, it takes a lot of time to make the fermented foods, but once you have them, they can last for months. So on a day-to-day basis, it can actually be a time saver. So I wanted to see if you had any advice for fermented foods.
I love that you asked that question. We do kombucha. We buy Synergy because we haven't made it before, and our house is a pretty small house, so I don't have the huge kitchen that I would love to have. So we buy it. And then we also buy sauerkraut as our other fermented food source. And then I've had other fermented foods in the past, but that's kind of what we stock in our house on a day-to-day basis. And fermented foods are also great for digestion. And there's vitamins in there that you can't, you know, get on a vegan diet. So those are important parts of a vegan diet.
Remember, an easy one to throw in, too, is the raw apple cider vinegar from Bragg's.
Yeah, we do use that, too.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But as far as foods go, we use that, in, you know, if I'm going to make a dressing or I'll put that in some smoothies if I can hide the bitter, you know, the taste of it.
Yes. Anything else, Dennett? You're good.
That's it for now. Thank you.
Okay. And I know Jeff has a question. And by the way, Michelle, Dennett, as you know, makes kombucha, and so does Jeff, who's going to ask a question right now.
Okay.
Hi, Brian. So mine wasn't a question as much as a comment about the sprouting of the nuts. So what I've learned from, you know, the wonderful source of information called the internet is that by soaking them for a day, it activates their enzymes so that they go into a germination mode. And so you leave them in kind of a warm, dark place for 3 days after you've soaked them, and that allows them to regenerate and start to sprout. And so that's the time frame that you need in terms of sprouting. So the same kind of environment is what you need for fermentation as well.
Yes. So Jeff is my source for kombucha when Dennett doesn't meet my needs for kombucha.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. That was great information.
All right. So a couple more things, Michelle. I think we kind of touched on it, but give us I know we talked about how we don't need as much protein as we think we need, and Dr. Heidi Dulay spoke quite a bit on this as well, and I don't know, you probably heard this too, Michelle, that Dr. Heidi recommends a diet of 50% to 80% fats. And it's really, she's an advocate of, animal protein, but really she doesn't recommend that much animal protein either. So it kind of one of my goals is really kind of how do you, and we've talked about this at the CHMRC with Dennett as well and others, that, how do we kind of find a common ground for all of this? And that would be really great for us to put a position statement on, on at some level, but there's a lot of commonalities, right? So, but what are you using for protein? I know we got soy, we got beans. You mentioned seeds and nuts. What else? Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Quinoa. I do a lot of chia. They have 4.7 grams per ounce. I don't use fake meat. I don't like processed meat. The processed fake meat, and I don't do well with a lot of wheat. So I tend to avoid that because I'd prefer to have a piece of sprouted toast than a piece of fake meat. But seitan is an alternative for people that, especially when they're transitioning, if they're leaning towards a more plant-based diet and they're craving just a texture, there's some really good seitan out there that has good texture. I just prefer to keep it a little cleaner. Quinoa I mentioned.
What about tempeh? Fermented soy.
Yes, we do tempeh. That's another fermented food we eat that I didn't think about. We do tempeh. We make our own tempeh, quote-unquote, bacon, and I have a recipe for that. Also, very people know that cocoa powder, unsweetened, has some protein in it. So just over my course of the day, as opposed to focusing it on one meal, I try and just put a little bit into every meal.
Here's kind of a funny question, I think, is why do the raw foods world and vegans tend to do things like mock chicken and, mock bacon? It's like, if you're not going to eat chicken or bacon, why call it chicken or bacon, Like, why do you want to pretend you're eating chicken and bacon if you're going like a raw foods model? It's just funny.
Well, I think that some people are vegan for different reasons or eat plant-based for different reasons. So I think that for me, if I see chicken on something, I'll think, is that really chicken? So it is a little confusing. And I think it's a marketing thing where, probably the owner of the company may not be vegan, so they may not see. And I agree, it is kind of funny. But it also may help sell the product in some way. I'm not really sure.
Yes.
But I tend to stay away from processed food in general.
It's like as you're eating your soy, you're thinking about eating chicken, right?
Scarily. They taste a lot like it. There's a new veggie grill in Walnut Creek, and I haven't been there, but I've heard that their fried chicken tastes a lot like chicken. And for me, I'm just, it's a lot of salt. That's how they're making it taste like chicken. So, so interesting.
That's funny. So last thing is just vitamin B12 sources are missing in a lot of vegan diets. So let's just touch on that real quick, and then we'll go to questions.
Well, interestingly enough, vitamin B12 is missing in a lot of diets because, for example, gorillas. Gorillas are, as you know, they don't eat other animals, and they get their vitamin B12 from the micronutrients in the soil and the bugs that happen to be on the plants that they're eating. You actually don't need a lot of B12. I think it's 3 micrograms a day. So there are kind of schools of thought out there where a person is plant-based for 2 weeks, and then they'll eat clams for their B12, every 2 weeks. So there are ways to do that if you're not vegan, if you're not a strict vegan. Then there's B12 supplements that come from, obviously microorganisms that are, found in
fermented foods as well. In fact, kombucha has, I think the one that I drink has almost a quarter of the daily amount of B12 in it. There are, you know, sources that are supplemental. So that's, you can't really get it too much B12. So if you're worried, even, you know, whether you're vegan or not, that you're getting enough B12, which is an important, you know, vitamin to get, then supplementing would be a good idea. It's really hard to get too much B12. So I personally take a supplement that comes from blue algae. It tastes, it's not my favorite taste, but I take it anyway. And it's a drop form. You can just drop it into water and mix it up.
All right. Very good. So real quick here, I want to go to some, see if there's any dying questions out there. And then we're going to go to breakout groups. So anybody have any questions, please hit 3. I think Chris has a question, if that's correct. She, I don't know if she accidentally hit the phone.
Accidentally, sorry.
Okay, yeah, don't worry about Chris. Dennett, quick question if needed.
I was wondering why I didn't hear much mention of yeast as a form for vitamin B supplementations, or
you know,
adding brewer's yeast.
Yeah, use brewer's yeast a lot. We've actually bought a vat of it, like a huge vat, and it was really it's expensive. So it's much more cost effective to buy that. Now, there's a couple problems with it. They want you to store it in the dark, which, you know, can be difficult. So we keep our vat kind of underneath the counter and just scoop it out of there, you know, when we need it, and it's closed and sealed. Once it's exposed to air, I've heard that it loses some of the nutrient density. So there's, you know, they say it's not a reliable source of it. Another thing, and again, I still take it. We actually do like a vegan eggs Benedict that you coat the tofu in the nutritional yeast, and then you fry it lightly in coconut oil, or you can bake it in coconut oil. But I also know people who've done a few 28-day cleanses, and they've taken nutritional yeast or brewer's yeast, and they have some adverse effects to it. So it's something that some people can't digest well in too large amounts. So, you know, you're not going to eat a ton of it in a day, and so it's not a reliable source, but it is a source.
And one final question, Tanya.
You get
Tanya,
the supplement. Can you hear me?
What was that? No, I can. Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
I'm just curious, where do you get the supplements MK7 and MK4? Because I actually talk to a lot of people in consultations that I do with boot camp members, and, you know, I'll come across vegans, vegetarians, and so it would be great for me to be able to tell them specifically where they can get these supplements.
Absolutely. I can actually send Brian some links for some reliable sources. Because they're not that popular, sometimes some places run out and some will have them. So if you want, I can send you those links. Is that helpful? Okay, yeah, I'm happy. And then one little thing, the omegas, I just kind of popped into my head. That's a big concern for a lot of people who don't eat fish. And so hemp seeds are an awesome balance of omega 3, 6, and 9. They're actually the perfect ratio. So hemp seeds can be sprinkled on, you know, if you're gluten-free, if you have gluten-free oatmeal, or you can throw them into a shake or use hemp oil in a shake. That's just been, I've noticed a good difference in my diet and the feeling of my body since I've added in hemp.
Yeah, perfect. Good. So I want to go into breakout groups right now, and Michelle, you're welcome to join us in the breakout group. So we're basically going to talk about, you know, what did you learn from your talk, and do you feel differently about a vegan dietary model for yourself based upon what your past was and what you experienced in the past? So Sherry's going to guide us through that exercise. Michelle, are you okay being in the group?
Yeah. Is it till 12:30?
Yeah, we're just going to – actually, it's going to be 6 minutes. Two minutes each.
Sure.
So each person's going to talk for 2 minutes each. What did you learn? Do you feel differently? Also, if you – there may be something that comes up related to that. Please.
Sure.
Mention it.
I'm happy.
2 minutes. 2 minutes each, and Sherry will go over the how to do this.
Okay. Super simple. As soon as I say begin
Just say your name out loud and greet each other. Decide who goes first. You'll have 2 minutes each. When you hear the chime, it's time to switch and allow the next person to have their turn. And Brian and Michelle and Tanya will be visiting groups, so just be aware that they may be there as well. And ready? Begin.
Please bring your conversation to a close. This breakout session is now ending.
All right, I think we're back to the main room now. Is that right or no?
Yes, we are.
All right. So thank you all for sharing and being part of the groups, everybody. So, you know, I always want to end with just taking some kind of action. So, you know, I would recommend experimenting with your diets and, you know, taking some of the information you learned today and trying it out. You know, some of you have tried a vegan or a vegetarian lifestyle in the past, and maybe you were like Michelle when you first started. You ate a lot of canned beans and processed white flour and a lot of gluten and things of that nature, and you know that didn't work for you. And you know maybe you were consuming a lot of dairy as well. And sometimes people even have dairy in their coffee and they think that they're not having dairy. And I have to say, well, that is dairy, you know. And it's been interesting to see so many people just remove the cream out of their coffee and lose 3 to 5 pounds in a few days. So, you know, if you're eating anything that causes you harm, that's going to create inflammation and digestive stress and food allergies and increase in cortisol levels and throw off your hormones. And it's just one big cycle. So, anything and everything can cause problems. So the question is, you know, can you improve that vegan or vegetarian model? And I think we all can. And, you know, and the same thing for those that eat animal proteins. So everybody can fine-tune their diet and tweak it a little bit and make it better. And a lot of the foundations are the same. And we've had a couple of discussions in the past. Dennett Lewis and I were on his TV show, and we had a debate on paleo versus vegan. And then Michelle Brown and Dennett also had another TV show on the same topic. So we have some good info for you guys to think about if you want to dive in more on that. But, something to think about is I have my 10-day detox. And whether or not you follow the whole program or just the dietary model, you know, I basically, if you follow the day 1 and 10 and day 10 part of the program, it's a healthy vegan vegetarian model. It's vegan if you just take out the fish, and it's, you know, pescatarian if you follow the fish model. But for the most part, it's healthy model. There is no dairy allowed. I am a big fan of butter because that is one of the easier ones to digest, and it's got a ton of nutritional value, but so I would recommend adding butter. But or follow just a straight vegan model. And I would highly recommend using the nutritional lifestyle record sheets that I created. Those are in the file area to track and notice trends. So write down what you're eating and how you're feeling. It'd be really interesting to do it like today if you're following a more of a paleo type model or an animal protein model. Track how you're doing the next couple of days on that, and then let's go to this, vegan or vegetarian experimental diet, track and see how you're feeling after you eat. My interest is how do you feel immediately and 1 to 2 hours after your meal. So that's my challenge for all of you is just, play around, see what works for you. And, I'm really interested in seeing what happens. So our next session is Thursday, February 6th, and actually we're going to talk about the opposite here because I thought it would be a good comparison. We're going to actually go into a paleo diet and similar models of eating. I'm not necessarily an advocate of paleo per se, but I do eat animal protein. So, but we'll just talk about some differences in that. And you know, at the end of the day, they're healthy foundations in all of them. So does anybody have any questions before we go? And also, I will be on the call, and if Michelle has to leave, go for it. And if you have any questions for Michelle, I know she does have to leave, so I can shoot her some. I can forward her your emails, and we can also answer them on the forum on Facebook, our private Facebook page. So, any questions? I will stay on the call now. So let me know.
Katie has a question. Go ahead, Katie.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
I'm still here, by the way.
Oh, good. Yes. I'm so glad. So, Michelle, I wanted to say, Michelle was in my group, and what you were saying about how to approach the cooking was really awesome because you were talking about using positive thinking to approach your cooking, and I never thought of that before. Mm-hmm. So you're saying make it a good experience all around and be really present, and I got it, thankful for the knife. So I just wanted to say thanks, and if it's helpful for other people, I thought it was a really cool application of things that we've been talking about.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you like that. Yeah, it's just something that I happened upon in some Zen reading I was doing that, you know, it really is a privilege to eat well, and if you can just slow down and appreciate it, then it can eventually become something that is a healthy habit that you spend time with yourself, and I said put on a little music and, you know, try and enjoy the time that you have.
Very nice. Any other questions before we head out? All right. I think we're good for the day, everybody. So, Michelle, I want to thank you for being on the call. Thank you, Sherry, Tanya, and everybody who contributed. And just, you know, we're all continuing to grow and learn and just